It's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. You're very welcome along to the 9 to noon show here in Highland Radio. We're all still continuing to build the excitement. We're all heading towards Sunday. It's the big one, isn't it? Lee Gooch keeping the build-up going excellently on the show. Good luck to him and the guys as they undertake another big drive for a fantastic cause. Just before we get into the show in general, Highland Radio's Road to Croker, the big match countdown live show, was broadcast last night, and it was a cracker. I was chatting to a few people that were actually in at the show, and they thought it was brilliant and really got the buzz going. So fair play to Oisin Kelly, Brendan Devaney and all the crew. If you've missed that, by the way, it's now available for you to listen as a podcast on our website. Not until after, well, I can't say after 12 because then that's John's show. But anyway, just don't switch off the 9 to noon show. But if you want to listen to that show from last night, it's there, ready to go right now. And loads of good chat, actually. Obviously, some serious conversation about the game and our chances. But great live music, great crack. Audience there, a big crowd, and I think they enjoyed it too, which is fantastic. Also, we have some brilliant stories, some brilliant people to chat to over the course of the next few days with memories of 92, 2012, how they're going to watch the game on Sunday. Maybe they have a special role to play in the match on Sunday, you know, some younger people as well. We put the call out on social media yesterday. We got some great stories back. But if you want to talk about how you're going to watch the game, where you're going to watch the game, get them into us, 086 60 25000. We're going to be during the ad breaks, if you're watching the show, and you can watch the show on YouTube, by the way, Highland Radio Ireland, at home on your smart TV, your Fire Stick, or on your mobile devices. We're on Facebook and the X platform as well. But during the ad breaks, we're going to be scrolling pictures of little ones from 1992, 2012, who were pictured with Sam Maguire. And I'm looking at some of the ones in 1992, and they'd be big boys and girls now, wouldn't they? But anyway, so if you watch the show, you'll see a carousel of those brilliant pictures that people have been sending in to us as well. So we want any of your content to do with football, to do with the GEA, to do with the Donegal team. And we want your stories as well. We're a radio station and we want to interact with you verbally as well. So as I say, maybe you are listening in Dubai or Tenerife or America or wherever it might be. And I know there are time differences, but maybe you're organising a watch party, or maybe you're making the best of it, but would love to be home. Let us know, 086 60 25000. If you're outside the Republic, of course, 00353 86 60 25000. And for those of you who think, are we going over the top? No, we are not, because this is just as big as it gets in terms of sport, but also for us as a county. We have sometimes a lot to complain about, right? And that hasn't gone away. But we then have to be up for the crack too when we've got things going our way, don't we? And we have, thanks to Jim McGuinness, thanks to the lads, we've got a really exciting week and hopefully a spectacular Sunday to look forward to. So we have to make the hay whilst that sun is shining. So again, if you want to send in maybe your Sam Maguire baby, send your Sam Maguire photos from 92 and 2012 into the 9 till noon shows. We get excited for Sunday's big games. Photographs on our socials. There's loads of them there. We'll share them out, as I say, during the ad breaks and so on and so forth. And we've got some lovely little stories coming in as well. Right, so let's run through the newspapers, though, as well, because we have to strike that balance, don't we? And we'll see what's making the headlines. Let's start with the Irish Times this morning. Fast-track planning to speed up projects in €200 billion plan. So this is the National Development Plan. I mentioned this on the show yesterday morning, and this sets out the government's plans for project delivery, be it homes, roads, infrastructure, etc. And, you know, the problem is at the moment there are a great deal of bottlenecks in delivery because of planning and everything. But anyway, exemptions in some environmental assessments and a planning fast track for key national infrastructure are measures being studied by the government in its bid to accelerate project delivery. The Cabinet Committee on Infrastructure was briefed last week on a review of blockages in developing projects. It was told that while common law jurisdictions are being hit hard by delays in infrastructure, Ireland is especially vulnerable due to the slow pace of the civil legal system here. As part of the review, reforms introduced in other countries are being examined, with the government considering whether legislative steps are needed. This comes as the coalition prepares to unveil its $200 billion National Development Plan, which was agreed last night when the funding allocation for the Department of Housing was signed off on. So we won't know the infinite details. So would the like of a rail link, well, that's less likely. Okay, let's go with the 10T. You know, you'd want to see that in the finer detail, but that will be released in a few months. But there are other infrastructural developments up here that we'd be keen to keep an eye on, and we'll keep an eye on them for you, of course. The Irish Daily Mail, interested with your views in relation to your views on this. Vasectomies may soon be offered for free across the country for the health minister has confirmed. Jennifer Carroll McNeill was responding to a question by Labour's Marie Sherlock, who told the Dáil that it was time for men to step up and stop relying on women to use contraception. Responding to a parliamentary question from Ms. Sherlock, Ms. Carroll McNeill agreed that there was significant inequity of access to vasectomy, both geographically and based on ability to pay, and that the government is now considering free access to vasectomies across the country. She said that the Department of Health's National Sexual Health Strategy is committed to scoping the potential for expanding access for male and female sterilisation, including vasectomies for men. What do you think about that? Right, there's a couple of conversations going on here. Obviously, in terms of contraception, the ball is most often in the female's court, right? I mean, obviously, there are actions guys can take, but I think for the most part, it seems to be, and I'm open to correction, women that have to take on that responsibility. But I mean, say, for instance, if you use a contraception, you can come off it. I think a vasectomy is pretty much there, done and dusted, isn't it? And a woman being sterilised as well, a big, big call, a big shout. But what direction are we moving in relation to sort of population growth here? We have a vastly ageing population. We're not going to have enough young people actually to look after the older people very, very soon, actually, in the next few generations. And now we're making it very, very easy not to have kids. Should we be encouraging families to maybe have more children for the future of the country? I mean, other than that, obviously, you have to rely on immigration. The country has to have younger people to look after the older people, to work and pay tax. That's just a fact of life. And we have a situation whereby it's becoming easier and easier, and maybe a lifestyle choice or a choice that's put in front of you, and now it's free for a woman to be sterilised, for a man to have a vasectomy. I just wonder, are we really thinking? You can't compel people to have kids, don't get me wrong, but maybe you can encourage people if there's financial consideration, or maybe they need more supports or what have you. So we've got, like, you know, 10,000 plus abortions a year. We've got free contraception. Again, I understand why that's important. And now free sterilisation or vasectomies for women and men. It would make you wonder where we're going and how we're actually going to survive as a, I was going to say as a race, but you know what I'm on about, as a country population. We are setting ourselves up for a situation whereby the only way the country might survive is to actually bring in younger people from other parts of the world, because there simply won't be the young people that you need to sustain a country and to look after those that are in it. It just seems that every avenue is anti a child being born, if that makes sense. That's not an opinion, it's an observation, and anyone could make that observation, and I would make the exact same observation around a kitchen table or at a bar. It just seems that everything is directing us to not having children, and that's all that's free, and that's what's handy. And we need young people. I'll need young people to look after me if I survive another 20 years. What do you think? Have you any concerns in that regard? Any views in relation to that? Am I barking up the wrong tree? Should I be looking at this purely as a... you know, that people can make responsible decisions about not having children that they don't want, or, you know, maybe having children that they can't afford. I don't know. But if I look at all of the evidence before me, it seems everything is laid out to make it very easy not to have kids. And there's very little seemingly there to encourage or support people to have children. And as I say, the fact is we need young people. That's, you know, we would just literally cease to exist without repopulation. Any views in relation to that? 086 60 25,000, 086 60 25,000. I mean, we're already seeing schools closing because there simply isn't kids in an area in great enough numbers to keep them open. We have to look after our kids. And one way we should be doing that more is online, I think. This is the Irish Independent. None of Ireland's most popular social media apps has implemented new age verification controls on the first day of the Irish media regulators' crackdown. A survey by the Irish Independent shows. I love the fact they call it a crackdown. It's toothless. It is absolutely toothless. Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube and X still require only self-declared age to create adult accounts and access adult content. Posing as a child user, the Irish Independent created new adult accounts for all the main social media services, as well as for adult-only services, Pornhub and OnlyFans. Within minutes, the test child user's account was being served hardcore pornography on X, as well as adult-themed content on Instagram. It comes despite insistence from Ireland's online media regulator, Commission the Man. The self-declaration is no longer permitted as a method of age verification. But as I say, I'm sorry, but that was always going to be a load of gobbledygook nonsense. The slaughter continues in Gaza. This is the Irish Daily Mirror. And 28 countries have now, including Ireland, Britain, Japan and a host of European nations, have issued now a joint statement yesterday saying the war in Gaza must end now. But it's not ending now, actually. What they're doing is the IDF, on behalf of the Israeli government, are now going into one of the pretty much last places that has not been completely wiped out. And of course, they claim that the IDF has a battalion there in this one isolated large town in the middle of Gaza. They're telling people to clear out so they can flatten it too. Well, it's the latest sign of allies sharpening language. At what point? It's like the country's destroyed now and now the allies are sharpening their language. But anyway, the foreign ministers of countries, also including Australia and Canada, said the suffering of civilians in Gaza has reached new depths. They condemned the drip feeding of aid and the inhumane killing of civilians, including children, seeking to meet their most basic needs of water and food. The statement described as horrifying the recent deaths of over 800 Palestinians who were seeking aid, according to the figures released by Gaza's health ministry and the UN Human Rights Office. And on and on and on it goes. And it's the images, you know, it's the kids with their faces gone. You can't look at them. How could you look at them? But maybe we should. Maybe that's what we need to do. This is just as an addition to a conversation we had yesterday. We were talking about the diet injections or the weight loss injections, fat jabs, people call them. And we were talking yesterday about how the fact that, you know, your muscle can waste as well. So it's great that you're losing weight. They're fantastic for people to lose weight, but also that you need to do some resistant exercising as well. But I did ask the question yesterday, and it was quite coincidental, like, you know, or opposed the scenario that, like, if you were taking them, when do you stop taking them? Because, you know, what happens when you do stop taking them? Does it bounce back? Do you take them forever? Now, there are different situations. You get people who are clinically obese. They have the obesity disease. They potentially have or are at risk of diabetes, and it's a medical thing. But there are those then that can source them privately that are taking them for, you know, body image purposes, but perhaps with an eye on the health. So what happens after you stop taking them? Well, people on weight loss jabs start piling the pounds back on just 2 months after they stopped taking them research shows. The drugs works well for those who have failed other methods or are very large. However, the hunger signals they block can start up again once the treatment ends. A review found slimmers kept the weight off for at least 4 weeks after stopping, but started putting back on by the 8 week mark. Patients who took Mounjaro regained almost half the weight they had lost whilst on the drug. Dr. K from Peking University People's Hospital said it is vital to establish long-term anti-obesity treatment. So in other words, they work fantastically, but some studies are beginning to show that between 4 and 8 weeks, the weight goes back on. And in that one particular study, half the weight went back on, but that means half the weight stayed off as well. And finally, the papers are obsessed with Molly's breasts. This is Molly Malone. She's got two shiny boobs because people can't resist rubbing them and getting a picture taken with them. And they were so worried about it, they had a steward deployed to Molly Malone to ask people to stop touching her boobies. And that worked. But then when the steward left, the people came back and started doing it again. I mean, what is the problem? It's not something I would do, but what is the big deal? Why are they so keen to stop people doing this? Now they're talking about putting a flower bed around it. But anyway, council chiefs have given up posting stewards at the Molly Malone statue to stop tourists from groping it and are now scrambling to find a more permanent solution. Dublin City Council believes the practice is ingrained into sightseers and confirmed they're exploring the idea of installing flower beds around the base as a possible fix. Really? People are just going to climb on the flowers, folks. Rubbing the famous fishmonger's boobs for luck is believed to have been thought up by a cheeky tour guide in 2012. But why are they trying to stop it? I must try and read on. I never will. Do you know why they're trying to stop it? 086 60 25000. Save me the Google, because I'd have to Google her boobs and I don't want that in my search history. Give us a call too on 07491 25000 if you wish. Keep your pictures of the kids in the Sam Maguire Cup. We have them from 2012. We've got them from 92. And hopefully we're going to create a new crop this month. We'll play them out to you as we take the ads. For those of you watching, a little Brucey bonus. Back with more in the 9 till noon show after we take this commercial break. Just to let you know, the graveyard mass in Tully Graveyard, Balliol, on Sunday the 27th has been moved forward to 1 p.m. due to Donegal playing in the All-Ireland. A caller says, good morning, Greg. Leaving my little one off to preschool this morning. The roads are awful with overgrown grass. The cars are nearly in the middle of the road before you can see what's coming up or down the roads. It's a disgrace. The hedges and grass needs cut. It is. The roads are getting very narrow. I don't know which area you are in, but yeah. I watched Jim McGuinness singing with Daniel O'Donnell last night's Destination Donegal. My goodness, he can sing. Is there no end to that man's talents? I haven't heard him sing. Right, okay. Let's say good morning to Nathan. Hi, Nathan.
Hi, Greg.
Right, we were talking or reading in the newspapers about the government considering making vasectomies free, sterilisation for women free, more accessible right around the country. You text in, what's your view?
So I texted in saying that I think an argument can be made that access to permanent contraception or, you know, sterilization for both genders is pretty much the same, if not more, available to men. You can ask any woman if they went to their doctor about getting sterilized, there'll be a whole bunch of hoops they'll have to jump through. If they're married, they'll have to get the husband's permission, all this kind of stuff, whereas a man can go for a vasectomy whenever he wants. But the real problem in contraception comes down to access to temporary contraceptions between the two genders, because men only have access to condoms, whereas women have pills, patches,
coils, loads of different stuff,
et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Now, there is a headway in this. I read recently there's a new pill for men in final stages of testing or something like that. But, you know,
do you think, Nathan,
sterilization?
I'll ask you about that. But do you think, even if there were a contraceptive pill available for men, do you think men would take it? Like, in big numbers?
I think so.
I don't know. I do wonder, would they? I wonder, would they sort of go, well,
I mean, like, the question becomes down to, like, it would be both parties would have to take it. It wouldn't be a case of, like, you couldn't necessarily trust every man to take, you know, when he says he's taking the pill, that he's taking the pill. But, you know, a woman would still have to take her own pill.
Well, then you'd sort of say, well, if you're taking your pill, why should I take my pill? Do you know what
I mean? It's about building the whole... I mean, like, a woman should still be taking her pill if a man's using a condom, nonetheless, you know?
The condom serves a double purpose, of course, for both. It's not just about contraception. It's an interesting... I don't know the answer, Nathan. I was just supposing, as you put it to it. But you were going to go on to talk about sterilisation, then.
Yeah, I just don't think the government should be jumping into because, as you said, about the whole, you know, we're approaching a bit of a fertility problem here, is like, and we're good for Europe in terms of, like, fertility problems. The rest of Europe's even worse than us, but, like, we're starting to hit that point now, and, like, we have to look at Korea and we have to look at Japan and, like, how bad things are starting to get there, and we really need to think about things before we start going, yes, it's free for everyone to sterilize themselves. Jump ahead. You know what I mean? Like, that's a very careful consideration we have to make.
Yeah, and as I say, you know, and this is not a moral judgment or a judgment on democracy or an anti-this or a pro-that, but we are seeing an excess of 10,000 abortions a year. That's happening. Now, abortions were always happening, do not get me wrong, but you couple with that then, and maybe it might have an impact on that number, you couple that then with people being permanently sterilised, not to ever have kids, and both, the access to both has been made as easy as is possible, right? What are we doing to promote the positives of having children, or the support for people having children? Or, you know, it seems to be sexy now to say I'm 40 and I'm childless and I'm free and I don't need a babysitter. It's just everything. I'm only twigging this now, to be honest with you, but everything seems to be designed to make it cool not to have kids or easy never to have kids.
Yeah, and I actually did send on a follow-on text to my last text before I got called by you guys there. But yeah, like, I would say that, like, my generation, because I'm now 31, I would say my generation were kind of like, had it beaten into our heads to not have kids, at least until you're very well set up. You know, don't, every single adult around us, all the TV shows, the whole media culture around us was, don't have kids until you're fully set up. And now look at the situation that our society's in.
But you see, the truth is you're never fully set up to have kids. You never are,
exactly.
Unless you're incredibly privileged, but you're not. You really have to sacrifice an awful lot to have children, but now that's being seen as a weak choice.
Yeah.
You know, women are in early 30 now before they have their first baby. Men are in the mid heading towards the late 30s before they have their first children. You know, we have all, people go, well, why is there auto enrollment for pensions? Because the money's running out. We're going to have too many old people and not enough young people. That's what one of the key reasons why there's auto roll in pensions, because we will not be able to meet the cost of pensions.
That's exactly right. Yeah, the whole social contract is built upon, you know, you will have kids. Those kids will then work to pay for you whenever you are old and infirmed. That's how the social contract works. That's how pensions work. Like, and we're breaking that by not encouraging people to have kids. We're breaking that by not helping people find homes so that they can have the kids in, and we're not helping by creating a culture that continuously promotes not having kids through the media.
You used the phrase rugged individualism. Is this one you've coined, or is that one that's out there? What's it about?
Well, that's it's sort of this whole, like, all of this. I would say it's one that's out there, and it's sort of tied to the whole internet selfish culture that we have right now, where everyone is individualistic. We have lost sort of community and cooperation, and then this has been on the decline since Reagan and Thatcher in the 80s, you know, since we started selling off public assets en masse, and everyone is now corporatized and in their bubbles, you know.
Yeah, but also too, it's the way the state is set up. It's not just here. Say, for instance, for women, it is almost still a choice whether you have a career or kids. You know, it is a problem in some companies, if you have children, it can affect career progression. You know, you are being told it's not all about women, don't get me wrong, but we don't have the same problem as fellas. You're being told that you can, you know, reach the top of a company and be a, you know, a CEO or whatever it might be, but you can't do that and have kids as well. you know, so society's not set up really to harness or embrace families, I don't think, looking on.
No, I would agree with that. It's not set up to embrace families or encourage the continuous growth in a constructive manner.
And it is a Western thing, particularly. So, you know, the demographics of the world are...
South Korea and Japan.
Sorry, yes. Western in inverts, you're correct. I know the likes of China are reviewing their child policies and what have you, and they're actually having to seek to, you know, this idea that China was a closed-off country, they're now actually seeking people to come into that country because of the same reasons we're talking of. Certainly parts of Asia and the United States, Europe, but there are other parts of the world where it's far more family-orientated.
Yeah, there is, yeah.
Mm. All right, Nathan, thanks for your input. I really do appreciate it, by the way. Thanks for taking the call after the text. Hi, Eunan.
Hello, Greg.
What say you? Good morning to you. I'm doing all right, Eunan. All's good, actually. It's a great...
That's good.
Yeah.
No, I was just listening to the conversation there, and I think that the reason that the people are not... young people are not having children today is just because the price of everything has gone through the roof. They can't afford to have them because they can't get houses for a start, but if they could, they'd cost them a fortune. The food prices have gone through the roof. Sending children to school has gone through the roof. They just can't afford to have the children. The government...
Just in relation to that, Eunan, I don't know what age you are, but I'm old enough to remember where there were more big families. We had a big family. There were seven of us in the house, right? And I don't want to sound like an old fart, but the truth is we didn't really have much. Now, we had everything that we needed, but we weren't able to pick and choose what we had to eat in the evenings. We weren't able to sort of pour a litre of milk over some cornflakes every single morning. You know, Mum and Dad weren't able to have a very expensive car. They never went on holidays. If they did, it was sort of driving somewhere. Like, you know, if my point being... if it was down to finances and the cost of doing stuff, my parents wouldn't have had seven kids because they, you know what I mean?
Well,
it's not like
we point there because there are actually 10 of us in our family.
Yeah, but did you have, I mean, did you get to say, right, Mum, I don't fancy that stew tonight? It was put in front of you.
Whatever my mother put on the table, to eat it. And if you didn't eat it, you'd eat the fingers of yourself the next time because...
And how often were your mum and how often were your mum and
a different how often for everybody, you know?
How often were your mum and dad down in Lanzarote whilst you were all in the house?
My mother, I think when we were growing up, she never was on holidays, to tell you this.
So
my father wasn't on holidays very often either because he worked 7 days a week.
And that was for you guys. We don't do that. I'm not saying what's right or wrong, but that's my point. The reason what I was trying to say all of that is I don't know what's right or wrong, but if we were waiting, we want a certain lifestyle, and if we were waiting to sort of have that lifestyle and then have children, that's not going to happen until you're in your 40s, if you're lucky.
Yeah. Now, I hear people saying, and I hear it on the radio here often, but people saying that the people are living longer.
Yeah, true.
I have to disagree with that.
Okay.
Because I actually lost my daughter last year.
Oh, no, you know.
And I know a lot of people that has lost their families as well before me and even up to now. And I'll tell you this. I was going to the graveyard nearly every day.
Yeah.
And the amount of young people that's in the graves in the last 5 years.
They're very little
old people, and it's all young.
I keep hearing about the
young people are living longer, and the old people. That's not true. Because you want to take a look at the graveyard in Lake in Cornwall and see how many old people have been buried in the last few years. It's all young people. I don't know what's going on, but I know one thing: they're not living longer.
Yeah. Are you okay? How are you holding up, Eunan? It's every parent's worst nightmare.
Well, I was getting it very tight to tell you it's just there for a long time there.
Okay.
I'm still not over it, and I'll probably never get over it, but it's not easy, not an easy pill to take.
No.
But getting back to the housing or the young people not having children. I don't know. I know you have a point there, what you're saying. The old people years ago worked at it, you see, and they made the money. I suppose when you think on it, you could work with less, you know, but there are that many things going on today. A young person today looking for a phone now, a phone at 60 or 80 quid or 100 quid is no good to them. They want one at 500 or 1,000 now. It has to be these iPhones.
Yeah.
They want too much and they're getting too much.
Yeah, and we want a lot. We as the grown-ups too, do you know, we want to have the house, the security. We want to have a nice car in the driveway. You know, we want to maybe to get away once every now and again. As I say, I know my parents, and we've heard from your parents, Eunan, they weren't fit to do so, but that was okay. You know, that was okay. I don't think my mom and dad felt hard done by, and thankfully they did get to travel a little bit later in life when everyone had peed off. But, you know...
So did mine, thank God, in later years as well. They did, but they worked hard at it for a long time to rear 10 of us. And my father was never on the dole in his life. He worked door to door and he reared the 10 of us from just a van running around the country. After he passed away, I heard a lot of lovely stories about him from people that he used to go to. Because when I way back, it was 40 years ago, 40-odd years ago, he had a heart attack and I had to do the run for him. And I met a lot of people. I know a lot of people all over Donegal. And I met a lot of people after and they were telling me stories about him. And I thought it was lovely to listen to the stories with my father. They used to work on a book system, you know. People couldn't afford to pay the full money. So they worked on a book and they paid so much a week.
And was it food? What was it?
Some of the old stories.
Was he doing food deliveries, Eunan, or what was he doing? If you don't mind saying,
well,
obviously.
My father had a nickname called Make a Bob. Because everything there was money and he was at it.
Make a Bob.
He had a butcher business going one time. He had a clothes business. He had a shoe shop. He had a coal business. He had a fireman going. And he ended up with fruit and veg before he finished. But I mind a revenue man years ago. It wasn't a revenue. It was a man in Convey. I worked in a medical factory in the beginning here way back in 1980. And he was head of the union. And he landed at my father's wake, and I looked at him and said, I think I know that man's face there.
Mm.
And I went over and I spoke to him, and I said, I think I know you. And he told me who he was, and I said, how come you know Daddy? He says, how do I know Fonsi? He says, well, you'll not believe this, he says, but he says, he sold me my first new car. I never knew he sold new cars. I knew he sold second-hand ones, but I never knew he sold a new one. He sold me my first new car way back. That must have been in the 50s or early 60s.
Wow.
But he was, everything there was money and he was at it. Make a Bob. And I only found that out the day that he was being buried. For my sister went up to tell a story and she says, not many people know this, but my father had a nickname. And I said, oh God, what is she going to put with? And she says his nickname was Make a Bob. So
go.
I thought it was actually very fitting because the one sure thing, whatever there was money in, he was at it.
Yeah.
You know, whether it was carpets, furniture, cars, scrap, firemen, he tried his hand at everything. And I remember one time when I was in the fire most of them years ago, I was only about 16 at the time, and that was something that I'd never done before, and they told me to do it, and I says, I can't do that. He says, what do you mean you can't do it? I says, I've never done it before. He says, don't say you can't do something you tried once. So I left school at 14 and I had no knowledge much of books because I wasn't interested in them. All I was interested in was firemen. So I left school at 14 and I was fireman for a number of years after it. And I left that then and I went to the medical factory in Edricini. And I was roofing and concreting and caving. I was doing a bit of stonework and plastering, and I helped you run a shop in Galway for 10 years, way back in the late 80s or 90s. So I learned that all out of school. So that was one thing he learned me. He says, don't say you can't do something, you try it once, and he's right.
It's amazing how your dad's words can stick stick with you, isn't it? Just one little, I say little, but one conversation, and that sort of set you on this pathway to become not quite Make a Bob Junior, but you knew how to make a few bob here and there anyway.
I would always say this thing, you know, use your head, your feet for dancing with.
Yes, I heard that one myself.
That was another saying he had, you know.
Yeah.
He was a great man, but I tell you, whatever I've learned up to the day was down to him, I have to say, even though I've no interest in books. He was hard to work with, but he meant well, like, you know.
Yeah, but it's like, he would have been, there would have been people glad to see him coming over the lane too, because, I mean, especially with bigger families back in the day, you'll hear the stories of the men or women landing with a suitcase, you know, and open the suitcase, and, you know, the larger families just dig into that, and that's how you, there was no trips to Pennies or what have you, you know, that's how you got the clothes right together for the kids for school or for something that was coming up or what have
God,
you.
Oh, God, well, this man now woke wild hard. He would have left the house in the morning at 8 o'clock. I met him in home day 12 o'clock at night. Mammy would still wouldn't go to bed until he landed back in again, and she had the dinner still ready, sitting in the oven waiting on him when he'd come in. Whatever time he'd come, the dinner was sitting ready, it was always kept warm.
And there'd be one room was
but
there.
I'll tell you a wee story
before I go. No, go ahead, Eunan, carry on, I'm in no rush.
I'll tell you a wee story just about him. I mind him coming back one evening, you know, from the run, and he looked at me mother and he says, Rose, he says, I had a great proposition today. Did you? She says, aye. I suppose you're going to tell me about it. He says, well, says, what is it? Says, the wee woman, says, I got in to get my tea away, and it was on a Thursday, you know, down by Doherty. And she said to him, she says, Fonsy, would you look after me? She says, I have a great farm here, and I have plenty of money in the bank, and the cows and things here. She says, it's all yours if you look after me. Aye, Jesus, says, woman, he says, one woman's enough for me. And at home when he turned Mammy this crack, you know, Mammy shouted, she said, all she could do was laugh. Because he's, to him, just, it was just, now, the woman only meant for him to look after her, you know, maybe in her older age or something, but daddy just, oh, no, woman, he says, one woman's enough for me.
Oh, lovely. Brilliant stuff.
But he used to have great stories around the country, you know.
And do you know what? He'd be spreading the stories as well, because he'd be carrying one story from one house to the next, to one business to the next.
There were women, not just all women, you know, but the older woman loved him, you know, because he was a man with great chat, you know, and he travelled about 1,000 miles a week, you see, door to door. And he would know what's going on around the country. He used to tell the younger people, even a cousin of mine, he used to tell him, if there weren't many potatoes, and he would say to him, put you in some potatoes this year, because he says, they're going to be a good price, so I don't see very many in this year around Donegal area. And he never was too far wrong, Nick, you know.
And he'd run. Did you mention he was running a book too? So, I mean, I presume he would also have a bit of credit there, a bit of tick or whatever it might have been called too, you know, help people out.
You see, when he was running the country, you see, people couldn't afford to pay the full money.
Yeah,
so he had
thinking.
A book where they would pay a couple of bob a week, you know.
Hmm. All right.
And that's the way he actually reared all of us. That's the way he had his life, going around the country, door to door, just selling stuff. You know, he never went to shops or hotels or nothing. It was all just door to door. A lot of the people would be down around Gidor and Gorta Hork and Dunlow and Kelly Beggs and away all around that area, you know, and Drenswally.
There'll be people remembering him today. He was just known as Fonzie, was he, when he landed at the door, or...?
Well, they knew who he was, Fonzie McNamee, but Fonzie they knew him, McNamee, they knew Fonzie, but they knew Daddy very, very well, like, you know. I remember the time of the week, and there was actually carloads of women sitting outside the gate at 9 o'clock in the morning, coming on to pay their respects, and they were crying.
Well, you see, obviously, he was calling around to homes where the fellas were out working, and he'd have a chat with them, and, you know, like building up a rapport too as well. They'd be glad to see him coming over the lane, like, I would say.
They were glad to see him coming, surely, because a lot of them, there are no shops. You see, Lidl and them things wasn't about then, you know.
Duns weren't delivering to your door.
Eh?
Duns weren't delivering to your door then.
No, there were nobody delivering to the door, really, way back when he started it. And they were quite glad to see him, because when he was on the drippery, he had a drippery shop as well, too, you know, one time, you know.
Right.
And I remember a wee man, it was my mother was along with him at the time, and this wee man used to come to me from Bonkrana side, and he said to me, you know, he said he was only a young fella at the time, you know, but he was like a 45-gallon drum. He was large. He was a townmate himself, you know.
Mm.
And he says that his mother went to get a look of a trouser for him, she says, could never get the trousers right because either the waist wasn't right or the legs wasn't right. Some one of them wasn't right anyway. But Daddy landed this day and Mammy was with him, and the young fella's mother said, I'm looking for a pair of trousers for this boy, but it's very hard to get a pair of trousers to sort them out because it's either the waist wrong or the legs wrong. And Mammy took a look at him and she says, how long months? She says, shoot out to the van and come back in again. Try them on. And they were perfect in the waist and they're perfect in the leg. And he was telling me this story. Now, I only met the man a few years back, but he was telling me that story because that was going back about 50 years ago. And he says, to this day, he says, I'll never forget it. He says, your mother, he says, Rose, he says, the only woman could ever fit me with a pair of trousers that I never had to take them up or take them in or take them out.
Amazing stuff. Ewan, listen, thanks.
Some great stories, you know.
Thanks for all the memories and thanks for sharing Fonzie with us. And I'm really sorry to hear about the passing of your daughter, and I'm glad that you're dealing with it or coping with it or living with it. I know you say you never get over these things, but thinking on you as well in relation to that, and hopefully your dad's. I'm sure your dad's.
I pray for her every day.
I'm sure your dad. Do you mind me asking her name?
I go to chapel and say my rosary for everybody, and I just have a wee thing here in the sitting room here looking at me here, just her photograph and the wee thing sitting around here, and I just be chatting to her myself here.
And what's her?
I don't know how people deal with it, but.
What's her first name, Ewan? What's your daughter's
Rosemary.
First name? Rosemary. All right. God rest Rosemary. Yeah. I'll think on her later, Ewan, as I'm sure many will.
Yeah.
And I'm sure she's with Fonzie. Listen, God bless you. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks very much,
all right.
God bless.
Okay. Take care, Ewan. Thanks for chatting to me. I really do appreciate that. Kim, hey, owner of Emerald Guitars in St. Johnston, is with me now. How are you getting on, Kim? Thanks for your time.
Hi, Greg. How are you?
Great to see you. Great to speak to you. Right. So you decided to go cave diving in an organized fashion. So tell us what happened and why did you go down the caves to begin with and where were you and all that stuff?
Well, it actually was on Sunday afternoons. So myself and my husband, Ali, our Alistair, as most people know him by, we do this thing where we plan different dates. Days or nights for each other, and it's a secret to the other person.
Lovely.
So Sunday was my day to do a date day, so I decided that because we're from Donegal, we always explore Donegal, and I thought, right, we have to do something different. We're always trying to find something different to surprise each other with. So I decided we'd go to Fermanagh, visit around the lakes. We went to Lusty Beg for lunch. We kind of ate lunch outside, the sun was shining. It had forecasted for some showers, but to me, in Ireland, it forecasts for showers all the time.
Mm.
So we kind of thought, well, we like driving. If it gets really bad, we can just drive to different locations and kind of go in to different places for coffees and things like that. But for the most part, it was dry. And then we could see the kind of the darker clouds rolling in, and we thought, okay, it is going to rain. So we're kind of looking at the maps and thinking, what is there in the area to do to get out of the weather for a bit? So I kind of thought, okay, we're going to go to the caves. I hadn't been there since primary school. So
yeah, these are the Marble Arch caves. Lots of us would have gone there on the school tour, all right, yeah.
Yeah, so kind of my last time there, I was only, I think, 11 or 12. I was in primary school. So we decided, okay, to get out of the rain, we'll go visit the Marble Arch caves. So we went there and we booked onto the 4:15 in the evening tour. I think it was the last tour for the day. It wasn't raining when we went into the visitor centre or when we started to enter the caves. There was no rain, there was clouds. And again, they weren't like huge clouds. It looked like the heavens were going to open. It was just getting a bit grey. We went in, did the tour. And yeah, that's when kind of everything went from going into the caves to avoid the rain. I came out of the caves absolutely soaked.
So the skies opened and it bucketed down quickly. When you were in there, you know what, if you're not familiar with it, you don't know necessarily what's normal or what's abnormal, right? So you started seeing water gushing downstairs and stuff. Was it clear that this is abnormal or is this part of the fun?
Well, I think as the caves, like, you know, they do the safety breach before you go into the caves of just what to expect, you know, and that, you know, every now and again, sometimes the lights go out, but they have generators that kick in pretty quickly. They never mentioned water coming into the caves. They actually joked on the little, there's a, part of the tour that you get on a little boat. They had joked that nobody has fallen into the water yet, but if you want to be a first, you know, so the kind of the tour guide was really humorous
bit, and
kind
yeah.
of, you know, so going in, it's one of those things where it's, you can go in there, like, you know, people, I know in my social media, a lot of people had commented, you know, why did she go into caves dressed like that? I mean, it's a cave that's accessible for everybody.
I don't worry. I'm not worried what people are saying on social media about what you're dressed in, Kim. Oh, come on. You've just... Oh, my, why? Why? You can think it, but don't type it. Who cares? All right, okay.
I mean, those comments didn't bother me.
I know. It's hilarious. It triggers me. Yeah. I don't know why. So, I'm so short on time here. Did you feel at any point in danger or... Because, I mean, did it feel like water was rising or your passage out could have been blocked? Or maybe you come across as a very calm person anyway, Kim, so I suppose it's subjective.
Well, I think, you know, the first kind of part where I was like, oh, the lights did go out, they flickered, and then the generator did kick in pretty quickly. Then the lights went out the second time and I thought, okay, the generator's supposed to be working these lights, but it came on very quickly again. And then they had radioed through from up above to say there's torrential rain on the surface and just to warn us when we're coming out of the caves, because we had to get steps with handrails. Kind of, there's like quite a few steps out. Once you're out at the top, there's more steps, which kind of just to tell us to be careful because the steps could be slippery because of the torrential rain on the surface. They didn't know at that stage that the torrential rail was actually running into the cave.
Wow.
So kind of there are natural little waterfalls in the cave, so you can hear trickles of water, but all of a sudden there was a rumble and that little trickles of water became gushes of water. Our pathways were like turned into waterfalls. The water, like, I wasn't fearful that the water was rising and that we were going to drown. I think the moment of fear was when we turned the corner to the stairwells. And the stairs that we're supposed to go up looked like something out of the Titanic.
Yeah,
and you're just thinking, okay. And there was two children on the tour with us, or not with us, but as part of the group that we went down in with. And they were about 10 and 8. So I could see that they were starting to become a little fearful and their parents were just reassuring them that they were going to get wet. So they were kind of telling them, you are going to get wet, but kind of trying to make it fun and not like a dramatic thing for them. I think... It was inevitable we were going to get soaked before we got out of the cave.
Okay. Well, that's you banned from date days. It's up to him now for the next two dates. That's your punishment.
Well, he's actually talking about a skydive in a couple of weeks.
Oh, my word. Okay. Listen, lovely story. I'm glad you're out safe. For a lot of people, that, you know, if you had claustrophobia and this was when you were going to face your fears,
I am claustrophobic.
Oh, no, right, okay. All right.
But again, the caves are quite open. There's no parts where it narrows in
kind of on top of you.
Yeah, it's one of those things. Life is an adventure and you just have to take it with a pinch of salt.
I love your attitude. I think I'd be similar. Thanks, Kim. Take care. Love to all. That's Kim Hay there, owner of Emerald Guitars in St. Johnston. Back with more after the break.